Welcome back to the Spinner Rack, all you new you maniacs. We're here at Season 4 of the Marvel New Universe Comics Podcast, the voice of the new universe. We're your hosts.
Andy with Justice number 25. And?
Steven with a backup story.
Promise, it's super exciting.
Or, more appropriately, a backup story.
You're the B squad today.
In 1986, the new universe was launched as an imprint from Marvel Comics dedicated to a more grounded and less fantastic approach to comics and world building. The original idea was the world outside your window with real-time progress and greater realism. After the first year, some books were canceled, although we see their characters in other places, and the remaining books have gotten consistent creative teams, origins were streamlined, and they are all becoming more action-oriented as the new universe becomes increasingly militarized in the wake of the world-shaking disaster, The Pit. Since then, we've seen the U.S. government drafting paranormals and possibly gearing up for a war.
We're talking about the comics still, right?
There's reflections of reality through the comics in many ways. So. With our podcast, you can follow along with us each week as we go through each comic in the order they hit the spinner rack, or just check out individual comics if you already have a favorite. A favorite so important to you that you don't want to hear anything about any of the others.
That's weak.
Hard to imagine. We have kickersinc.com as our website, and you can find us there with a trivia challenge fresh for season 4. And we also have at Kickers Inc. over on X, where frequently I will post things about our upcoming shows. One of these days I'll start expanding that. One of these days. Anyway, this week we get back to our mystery man, Justice. John Jensen is a paranormal who wields the sword and shield of justice. He brings his black and white fight against evil to paranormals who misuse their powers. Or does he?
That's actually like the perfect lead-in title to these last couple episodes, actually. It is a little more of a question nowadays. Justice 25. His name is Quill. Not very intimidating. And he could turn out to be the one foe Justice fears. A suspense-filled crossover with Psi-Force number 25, written by Peter David, illustrated by Lee Weeks. Mando offset paper.
I love that it's Mando offset paper.
Mando. So many things not really right about that.
Let's try it the other way. His name is Mando, and he could turn out to be the one foe Justice fears. Quill offset paper. That actually sounds much better. I'm sorry.
That's true. Though we are trying to keep Disney off our backs, though. So.
Shh. Do not tell everyone about our kickers. Anyway, we'll also be discussing our backup story with Night Mask, following up on last week's DP7. Things are very sequential here in the new universe now.
That's very true. And there's a lot of Night Mask to the point where I'm getting a little tired of Night Mask.
Yeah, I understand.
Anyway, Night Mask without his crew is just not quite the same, but we'll see. Justice number 25, cover November 88, though likely came out August 9th, 1988. And this cover is one I've been looking at like a lot for a long time in my collection. There was kind of like two. There's the one where like he sees the hallucination of his daughter as some like weird hideous alien. And I'm like, what in the world's going on in this issue? Because I hadn't read it yet. And then this one where it's like professional assassin guy, in the foreground pointing a gun. And then we have kind of in the background, you see Tenzin in the crosshairs. And then a random little bit of Washington Monument for some reason.
Yeah, it's, I'm not sure if that's, just left deliberately vague for, just to be kind of set, the location in the most general way possible. But
yeah, but the guy's kind of like, it's a nice drawing. It's a good detail. The guy kind of looks like the professional guy from the movie. You know, with the
Little
round
one.
glasses. Yeah. Except with
Couldn't
a flat
really.
top, which is distinctively different.
Yeah, I didn't have like a good who is this remind me of for this guy, but he's not I don't know. I mean, there's nothing like that we recognize about him, so
Yeah. What was
whatever
the guy
would I
from The
care?
Simpsons that like was annoyed by Homer all the time, like Grimes or
Frank
something?
Grimes,
Yeah,
yeah.
it kind of looks like that.
Okay.
That's what I'll give it.
All right, Grimey. Yeah.
All right. Last we saw Justice, he was basically full on working for the NSC. They shipped him out west, and he didn't really do too much other than maybe help some wind power guy win over his town.
He really half-assed it through his job. It's like, we'll go check out your paranormals, and they send their top agent, and he says, I don't know.
Yeah, let's
Why don't
just
we
leave this
just
guy
put on
be.
a show and I'll go back and lie? It's fine.
He
They don't
did wear
expect
a
anything from
cowboy
me.
hat, though, so there was that. But yeah, so
The hat
anyway,
is gone.
we pick up in an airport, basically, and Justice is narrating. When my daughter was little, I told her we'd be flying on a family vacation to Disneyland. She became very concerned and said, "But Daddy, I can't fly." It's a little silly. When I
Oh.
tried to explain about airplanes, she kept asking how exactly did the plane stay up? After all, it didn't flap its wings like a bird. I found I couldn't explain it. Not really. It's like we've come a long way in Justice narration boxes from the early days, where he's like not really even second guessing himself. He's just, oh, this guy definitely needs a vaporizing. Nice.
His self-confidence was one of his prime qualities, you could
True,
almost.
and that's a good addition to the recap too. Is the issue before, he went to the Justice Brigade, like those group of fanboys who were, murdering people with flamethrowers in the name of justice, and told them to cease and desist, and then they all burned themselves to a crisp, and so then his confidence is a little shaken. He's a little less. Nuke first, ask questions later a little bit, and
Is that what it's going to be like when Disney comes for our domain name?
nuke first and ask questions later.
We self-immolate ourselves rather than give it up.
You'll never take my one connection I have to Jack Magna Conti. My hero. Well, anyway, the comic book. Promise there's something interesting going on here. But yeah, so he kind of talks about his daughter growing up, and we're in the airport. There's a bunch of guys with signs, like the old cheesy sitcom movie thing, where they're holding the name of the person that they're coming to pick up. I'm pretty
I
sure.
still do see that at my
Do you still
airport.
see that?
At
And
least a couple at every time.
they're all Marvel names, like Gruenwald and Harris and Chase and Kalish. I didn't look up, but.
Carol Kalish was like a marketing director or something. I
Yeah,
think she
good one.
passed away young,
Okay.
unexpectedly.
And our guy from the covers walks up to one of them, says, "Looking for a Mr. Harris?" It's like, "Would you be he?" It's like, "I would indeed." Right. So we're guessing he's not Mr. Harris, but maybe he is.
I'm
Anyway,
suspicious already,
suspicious already.
but that's
New
mostly
hero.
because we saw him on the cover, so
Right. With a gun trying to kill Justice. So we kind of know he's bad. Maybe they shouldn't have put him on the cover.
are
No.
you here to kill justice, Mr. Harris? Ixnay.
That could be kind of meta. Like, was he involved in canceling the whole thing or something? So
Good question.
we got that. Anyway, we flip to the splash page and we get an I am Justice. And thoughts of my daughter are interrupted by something very unexpected. And then the title inside the book is Changes. It looks a little bit like Chances, but it's Changes.
It's also the title of the Mutator story from DP7 a few months
Right? I kind of
weeks
wish we
ago.
had some more Mutator here, but anyway. So Justice notices that guy from the cover who's now walking with the driver and notices that he's a paranormal. And So it kind of makes him pause, maybe and start to follow him. He's like, but he stops. He's like, I'm tired of this, tired of spending my life as a shadow. I have other things to attend to than endless judgments and sentencings. For the time being, court is in recess, which is totally lame, but he
Stop.
passes.
That man's got my purse. Court is in recess. What?
He passes up the chance to see what this guy's all about, which is kind of his thing, right? Judging paranormals.
It's, I mean, he gets the glowy eye thing for a moment there, which is always nice.
Yeah, right. Unfortunately, now the auras only are paranormal or not. We no longer judges them, good auras, bad auras, and auras for princesses he wants to sleep with. But anyway, so like
It's so pure.
the real Mr. Harris pops in, leaving no doubt that the other guy who took his car was up to no good. So they have a little bit of conversation. The guy actually seems pretty friendly. The mystery man from the cover has the driver pull over, and he's like, "You're the boss. You're different from the most guys I pick up. They never want to get where they're going at breakneck speed." So. And that's a pun because it's like the guy in the back who we later find his name is Quill. I'm struggling to not call him something, so we'll just give him away as Quill. Puts on some gloves, puts him on the sides of the driver's head, and just snaps his neck with a crack. So, but he's very polite about it. He's like, "Sorry, Ralph, my name isn't Harris. You're a help, Ralph. Really good help. If any luck, you'll be hard to find." And he hauls him up, picks him up, dumps him in the trunk, and then drives off with the car himself. So, assassin doing some assassinating.
It's possible to just rent a car at most major airports, but
That would be
okay.
way easier. We're just gonna taxi. I don't know, but I guess then the driver, the paper trail, whatever.
I
Anyway.
don't know if DC has like two airports, so I don't know which one this is supposed to be, or even if there were two at the time. I can't remember now, but
It's
anyway.
the murder in one, I guess.
You can also fly into Baltimore or, Phillies, that's also close. I don't
Yeah. Anyway, so we cut to back to the NSC and Updike, who's talking to Creeping Crud, who we met briefly before, is a guy who's kind of looks like a potato, and
I would say zombie,
yeah,
like.
somewhere between like a zombie potato. He's all brown, and like I guess anything he touched just kind of rots and dies. And Updike's talking to him, and he introduced Creeping Cred's real name apparently is Hugo, who just wants to go outside. But basically Updike ditches him onto Chauncey, his underling, and kind of moves on to have a conversation with Justice. He's like, "What happened with the paranormal in Texas?" And he's like, "The report from the prison warden was inaccurate. The young man in question was not a paranormal. End of report." So Justice is lying about what happened. I think the
Doesn't spend a
government.
lot of time on paperwork, which I know is a big thing in government
I bet,
circles.
yeah. I mean, of course, the NSC could just like interview three people from town and know that that's not true, but. Why follow up? But yeah, Updike's like, "How do I know you're telling the truth?" And Justice says, "You don't. Now tell me what happened here in DC." So fair, he's being honest. So he mentions the showdown between Rodstvow and Psyhawk and how Psyhawk is dead. Justice already knew that because he had that weird psychic impression, which I don't know if that means something in the future or not, but.
I don't know if that means something for Justice or something for Psyhawk. Like, did all paranormals feel that? I guess
Right,
not.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Was his daughter psychically channeling it to him or something? Who knows?
Let me just point out, all we've got is like there's a screen. They're projecting the images of those two guys on it, and that's your crossover with
That is the
Psi-Force
total extent of the
25.
crossover. It's true. One overhead transparency of Rodstvow.
don't even like, count those when I'm making up my list of characters that appeared in each issue. If it's
Oh,
just
that's a good
like a
point, yeah.
memory of someone or like an image of someone, don't bother.
Anyway, well, Updike's like, well, we're working on tracking down Rostval, and as soon as we do, we'll be sicking you on him. We can't have lunatics like this running around, particularly foreign lunatics. Particularly foreign lunatics. And Justin's like, I'll think about it. He's like, you'll think about it. Mr. Vengeance is mine. We'll think about it. John, what's with you? He's like, I have to think, that's all. You remember thinking? I've heard that even agents of the National Security Council indulge in it on occasion. It's very sassy. Where's my daughter? And we get the reveal. Angela's at the hospital with Kleenex. He got kind of crunched in the fight. So Kleenex, not dead.
Kleenex is alive.
I mean, he's not
Or,
really a character that I care about, but he's not dead.
Kleenex is alive. Okay. Yeah, I'm surprised, but also like too ambivalent about Kleenex one way or another.
Yeah,
So
he doesn't matter.
he's kind
Maybe
of a
he'll
one
matter.
joke character, so yeah.
Yeah.
But okay,
Anyway,
fine.
Justice basically walks out to go, presumably to go see Angela. Updike said, "We're not finished here," and but Justice just kind of glares at him, and he stands down. We cut to Quill, who we learn in a page or so that's his name. Looks like he's in a motel. Unpacking his classic assassin briefcase filled with disassembled gun and listening to some Jeopardy on TV. And then we get like a really brief like news report on the president being alive, his face being kind of messed up.
Yeah, they have like a nice thing where he's all bandaged up and we saw him perfect last week, last
Right.
issue. So
He
this is
looks a
all.
little bit more like Reagan in this drawing.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so
That's pretty good. Yes, just because I'm a lame duck doesn't mean I'm a dead duck. Yeah,
It's like the perfect Simpsons Reagan, I think.
thanks. It's the prism I view all my previous life through, I
Right.
guess.
Anyway, so Quill goes into like the meditation pose on the bed and starts talking, Judge. This is Quill. Are you hearing me, Your Honor? It's like, oh God, another cheesy themed villain. And then like the room kind of turns pink and we get these like silhouettes of eyes, and it's like, I hear you, Quill. I assume your trip was uneventful. So I guess we got some new bad guys for Justice, maybe. Quill also
Also,
sounds a
I
little bit like
didn't think
Dark
about,
Quill.
yeah, Darkwool. I just also I hadn't thought of it before, but yeah. And then this guy is, yeah, who knows? I was kind of hoping for like a visual where it's like one of those British judges with the big curly white
Yeah, like
wigs,
a big
but
spiky hammer gavel thing.
yeah, but.
Enter my courtroom of doom or something like that. But yeah, we don't get much from him. He's like, justice must die so that the forsaken can rest easily. Okay, we don't know what the hell he's talking about. You have our protection, and we are counting on you to make certain that the future is averted. So. Mystery stuff. I'm shrugging here, but I realize this is an audio-only podcast, so shrugging wasted.
He is, yes. I can also describe Andy while he's describing the book, if that would help people. I'm not
Andy looks
sure.
exasperated.
Yeah.
Steven is gesturing wildly to try and get my attention.
Wrap it up. Wrap
Wrap
it up.
it up. We're wasting too much time talking about the inside of the motel room. So yeah, we're rolling through the characters. We get to Angie in the hotel with Kleenex, aka Victor Pasco, I think his name was. And I guess he's alive. He's kind of in like the cartoonish traction with the leg up and the, half of his body in a cast. But he gives a big sneeze and Justice comes in and takes Angie to the snack bar to have a little conversation. She tells him about the fight and asked if Justice knows who they are. He says yes, and she's like, great, so when do we get those monsters? Like, again, what we want to see, Justice fighting Rostvow, right? This would be good. He's like, you
You
of
were
all
told you
people,
were the ultimate weapon, Justice, and
right?
then two guys just smashed your city up.
Starbrand turned lame, and then you are what we got left, right?
If
Anyway.
anyone's going to bring the hammer down on someone, we expect it to be you. Yes.
We're hoping. Justice not thinking quite so much, though. He's just not in the vengeance mood. He says, you of all people say that to me? They hurt Victor and a lot of other people. They have to pay for that. I'm sorry. That's Angie. Like, they hurt Victor, and all of a sudden she cares
They
about.
hurt Victor.
And he just kind of looks at her and starts walking off. She's like, Dad, where are you going? He's like, you don't understand anything. This is why I wanted to stay away from you. I sensed this would happen, that being with you would make me start to doubt myself. Your questions, your love made it harder for me to keep going, to be as ruthless as my mission required. It's becoming a little more human. So yeah, he's kind of like, and then, when I'm actually thinking of turning my back on that mission, you want me to exact vengeance. So he's a little confused. He's like, do you have any idea what maintaining that ruthlessness does to me? Do you? You're driving me crazy. Which is a very human side of justice that I'm not still 100% used to.
This is 100% Tommy Wiseau in the room. Lisa, you're driving me crazy. Yes,
Oh dear.
I don't know.
I've avoided seeing that one, so.
It's 100% on the nose 20 years ahead of time. I don't
Dang.
understand it either.
Oh. So, their conversation ends with kind of like, her mentioning that she's a paranormal. And then we cut back to Quill, who's breaking in on some random person's apartment, I guess. And they make some kind of cheesy jokes, but Quill does like a finger jab to the throat to kill the guy. So, maybe he's super strong. I mean, he kind of is showing to be sort of abnormally strong at least. But his quirk seems to be, he's kind of businesslike, polite, kills people casually, doesn't like it when blood gets on his shoe kind of thing. But he's basically setting up across the street in a classic sniper spot, and then we see in his crosshairs the front door with the little sign that says National Security Council.
We'll see it a little better in a minute, but the door and the main entrance to this, government spook show is like a townhouse door.
Yeah.
I think Keith Remsen's like clinic was similar to this, the Ballad Clinic, but
Right. They don't even have a lobby or anything. It's just right into the kitchen.
if you were saying this was the NSC safe house or something where they keep the paranormals, I could get okay, but it's not exactly the Pentagon here. Yeah, no, it's
No.
yeah, do.
That would kind of make sense. Anyway, we cut to Chauncey, so like all of the C-list characters are getting some time, talking to Creeping Crud, who's just trying to like talk his way out. Like, he just wants to go outside. He's like, I thought you guys would have something for me to do, some way to make me useful, right? And I've got nothing in my life. He sees a fly and then kind of like flicks out his arm, like he's kind of waving quickly at it, but then his hand breaks off like he's just made of kind of mud and goes flying and presumably kills the fly, but then his hand regenerates, which is pretty weird. So we get kind of a hint at his powers, and that also he worked at a bookstore, which he seemed to enjoy. So
This, I mean, I appreciate some of the dialogue here where he's like he doesn't want to go on living like this. Even lepers have colonies. I've got nothing. That's good. But then he's is some interesting after Pittsburgh blew up and I became like this. So okay, secondary mutation. You
right.
guys said you'd take care of me, find some way to be useful. But I read the papers. I know what's going on. The whole world's sliding into oblivion or something. And
Yeah.
I'm spending it locked in a room. So, yeah, it's interesting that we only kind of see this around the periphery, but it The sense of people within the world is that things are really sliding off the table, which
Yeah.
is interesting.
Again, we're talking about the comic book, right?
That too, yeah,
Okay.
sure.
Yeah. No, that's a good catch. I had kind of wondered and kind of figured that like the pit caused these extra mutations, and then we'd really started to see that with like the famine leech from last time and that kind of stuff. But still
Yeah, we
carries that.
haven't seen a like a positive mutation that came out of the pit, but
Yeah, they're all kind of gross. Maybe Jenny Swenson's is the least weird, but still disappointing. She looks like a bag of hot dogs or something. It's kind of unpleasant. Spray painted. Anyway, so we get more conversation between Justice and his daughter about her being paranormal. She's like, "You knew all along, didn't you?" I was like, "Well, yeah, I can see the paranormal aura thing." And he kind of starts talking about how maybe people that were predisposed to it, then they gained powers during the white event, so like I guess that's a little retcon-ish, but we did sort of see that with Psi-4. So those were like the kids had like weak psychic powers, or like, I'm really good with keeping plants alive and that kind of thing. That turned into powers.
They the white event and the black event triggered powers in those who already had a predisposition towards them, like a recessive gene brought to dominance. They have to keep walking this line that because mutants are such a big deal in the main
Yeah.
Marvel universe, and so they want to. But it I don't know. We'd thrown out this ages ago with the Star Brand and the old man who supposedly is 500 years old. And okay, so if people could trace their bloodline to him, maybe that would explain something, blah blah blah. Who knows? But we could just get little bits of
Yeah.
pieces.
Would have been a good idea, but not so much. So yeah, as they're talking from the front stoop of the NSC, they're under the sniper scope, but a bus goes by and kind of thwarts Quill. He makes a stupid joke. It's like, "There's never a bus around when you want one, right?" Yeah.
Speaking of stupid jokes, then I guess Justice is believes that Oswald did not act alone. So crazy, I know.
Yeah, there's definitely some JFK stuff in here too, as he's about to get sniped. But yeah, so they kind of continue their conversation inside the NSC about like maybe inheriting the traits, and she's like, "Well, what exactly can I do?" I was like, "I don't know. Unless the proper circumstances arrive, we may never know." Then we hear a scream. And Creeping Crud, who had grossed out Chauncey to the point where he had to throw up in the bathroom, has like broken out of the room and is just trying to get out of there. So everybody's just kind of running from him, I guess because he's terrifying looking, not because he's necessarily doing anything. Justice throws up a shield and stops him. He's like, "Do we have a problem here, Hugo?" It's like, "My only problem is I want to walk around. I want to start making some changes in my life. Is that so much to bloody ask?" And Justice lets him go. He's like, "All right, that's pretty reasonable." Uptech's like, "What are you doing? You're letting him go?" He's like, "In my judgment, his request seems reasonable. Interfere, Uptech, and you'll regret it, but not for very long." So he's probably regretting hiring on Justice too. Yeah, we were talking off camera about, people who are maybe not good fits for jobs. It's like, yeah, doesn't really listen, maybe not great for government. But Justice's like, "Don't worry, I'll go with him outside. I'll protect him from harm." And they walk outside, but then we start our panels of them walking out the front door are cut with, the butt and barrel of the gun. And it's like, "Justice tempered with mercy, an effective combination. It feels." And you've got Creeping Cred. We finally get to see his face. He looks pretty gruesome, but he's smiling. He's like, "Wonderful, the sunlight feels." And then blam. And then his head explodes. So yeah, so much for Creeping Cred. He's kind of all
Oh.
splattered everywhere.
Yeah.
Justice starts putting up the shield and deflects like the rest of the bullets. Quill's like, the sniper scope was off. So I bet Oswald didn't have these problems. Again with the JFK stuff. Justice kind of hanging there, like blocking the shots. And they're like, yeah, we can't close the door because creeping cred's in the way. It's like, well, you could just walk inside a little more. That'd probably offer equal to protection to front door. But and they're like, no, we can't touch him. And this part's kind of interesting. I'm honestly just sort of picking up on it now a little bit. And he's like, as I see Angela and the others look on in horror, creeping cred creeps one final time. So he looks at her, creeping cred with no head crawls his way back into the house so they can close the door. Like, is this somehow Angela's power? Or is
I
it just
kind
the
of thought it was
last?
just Crud himself, but that's
Okay,
just me.
yeah. But yeah, so maybe he's not dead, or now he's definitely dead.
I
It's
think
Kleenex all over again. I don't know who's dead.
I think with the like the power he just demonstrated of being able to lose parts of himself, he was like, losing his head would kill him, but like his body had like a little bit of life left to kind of, it could keep doing something without him somehow.
Yeah. Again, it sort of feels important, but then like you could just walk into the house more and then he wouldn't have a shot on you. So the door thing didn't seem quite so important. But anyway. So Justice is still kind of like blocking bullets. The guy doesn't really get the point. He just keeps firing. And he's like, I stood there and watched him die from a bullet clearly meant for me. There will be blood for this. There, I see the high window across the street where a flash just came from. So he realizes where the guy's shooting from, fires out a blast from his sword up to the window. Again, with the JFK stuff. But the angles are weird and wrong, but basically he gets a blast in on Quill, which kind of like, staggers him and sends him backwards. Justice goes running up to the building. As Quill comes like crashing through the back door, again, kind of like hard to tell what his power is in particular. And they kind of have a little bit of a square off as Justice confronts Quill, who's running away. Says, "Stop, and I'll let you live until you scream for drit for death." Why would he stop then? It's like, thanks, but no thanks. So he starts running. But then I guess changes his mind, kind of turns, pulls the gun on Justice. And Justice is thinking to himself, shields? Act defensively? No, I'd rather crush him like the insect he is. I'm like, all right, back to the old Justice. So he hits him with a blast, full on, but he basically shakes it off, kind of like he got punched. So he's knocked down, like he doesn't look sizzled or phased at all, just kind of dusts himself off. It's nice try. So maybe this is the protection that the judge was offering. Maybe it's his paranormal power. I don't know what's going on. Justice thinks he erected some sort of psychic shield, but how would you know that? And then he finally recognizes him as the paranormal that he left at the airport, right? So he says he came to town to murder me, and if I confronted him earlier, creeping crud might be alive. A sentence you probably weren't expecting to hear today. Says, on the other hand, if this Pismire did his job better, I'd be dead. I won't beat myself with what ifs. I guess that means ant.
That's what I got. Yeah. I'd never heard that word before.
That was definitely a had to look it up one.
I did like, I won't beat myself with what ifs. Like, could have been better. Could have been worse. Could have been worse.
Something happened.
I'm
Got
not,
done
what am I gonna
with.
say? Yeah.
This is what I will do is sharpen my sword. So he takes another shot at him, but Quill dives in the sewer. Justice goes after him again, jumps in like he's a ninja turtle down the sewer like a rat. Appropriate. He can't be gone. So he splashes down. He looks both ways. Doesn't see anything. It's like blast, lost him. So he got away. Justice pops back up as their hazmat suit dudes are loading creeping crud into the back of a van. It's like that line from Plan 9 from Outer Space, you know, he's dead, murdered, and someone's responsible. It's like, is that playback there? Like, I
That's
thought,
who I thought.
yeah,
Yeah.
just
She
thrown
shows
out,
up for one bad joke. That's it.
right? From just kind of pooping on a dead guy. Yeah, well. So Updike's like, question is now what? And Justice is thinking, he knows perfectly well what, but he wants me to say it. We find him, and when we do, then what, Dad? You got this one?
There will be justice.
Yeah. Which is ruined a little bit because the drawing of his face is a little wonky, but that's the end of the issue.
End.
All right. So what did you think about Justice issue number 25?
It's a
One of the comic books of all time.
yes. It's very middle of the road for me. It's got some positives and my negatives that sort of balance each other out. Overall, I feel like Justice isn't pushing forward very fast or something. And so we get like a lot of character kind of moments and this vague sense of his trying to move away from brutal black and white justice into justice tempered with mercy.
And then maybe
Well,
not, you know, because then he
yeah,
gets mad again because the pudding guy got shot.
it's yeah, it kind of two steps forward, one step back. Okay, but still, I get a bit of I'm not that invested in his new position with Updike and the NSC, his
Yeah.
daughter, Kay, she's, I don't know.
I
So I
think
don't
probably
know.
the most interesting of the side characters is like Playback, who's like tiny and afraid of him, but we don't see much of her. And yeah, like the side characters are not very interesting. I kind of really care.
I mean, we get
Even his
like,
daughter.
yeah, she's okay, but the Terrence Updike, if Justice isn't, doesn't have like a bad boss or something, then this sort of tough cop routine doesn't really go anywhere, you know what I mean? It's like, dang it, Justice, you're always out there playing by your own rules. When are you gonna do things by the book? I play by,
Trying to eat a sandwich here.
If the guy is just okay, whatever, then yeah, I mean, he's not wearing a uniform, his costume anymore, so he looks more normal,
Yeah.
but normal in the sense of kind of average, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't
So
mind the no costume, and I guess Updike is at least, you know, like you can't have another like tough, no nonsense, you know, government official guy kind of thing. Like, yeah. So at least his personality is a little different from, you know, Mac Browning or, you know, any of the other
true.
guys who pop in here and there.
I mean, he was at the Camp David retreat with the other who knows who guys last week or the last issue with the Reagan and discussing what to do, whether to announce that he's a paranormal or something. So
Yeah.
he's like a big wig behind the scenes. Okay. I mean, maybe we just don't see much more than this small group that of paranormals that he's gathered together.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I just heard something the other day that like Peter David as sort of a forerunner to Joss Whedon. And maybe that kind of felt very apparent to me as I'm reading this, because you'll have these sort of dramatic moments and then they'll be like quippy line,
Yeah.
man, that bit with the what is it, Plan 9 from Outer Space quote at the end was like came That was more unexpected than someone getting shot. I mean,
Right,
what?
especially because it was kind of like he was having this intense moment, right? Like the guy got killed, he felt responsible, he goes after him, he loses him, right? He's feeling responsible and guilty, and then it's like, hey, remember that movie? She's
Where did you come
standing on the
from?
guy's like brain matter, pretty much, like on that same step, so.
Yeah, it's the little, running joke with JFK. I mean, some of it's like well constructed. I always feel like that, but it somehow also isn't pushing forward, or at least not fast enough somehow. We'll have like justices, the world's toughest paranormal, but then yeah, Rod Stowe comes by and. Okay, well, you've been looking for Star Brand supposedly for a few months now. And
Yeah, gave up on that pretty quick, actually.
yeah, I mean, you would think he'd at least mention it once in a while. Yeah, I mean, it's just it doesn't feel like filler, but I guess I sometimes feel like I understand that he's going for this broadening justice's worldview,
Yeah.
mercy, justice tempered with mercy, or whatever he says. And it's like, yeah, I mean, I can understand that, except I'm not sure it lends to like greater adventures,
Yeah.
like
If he just
you.
acts like every other, well-meaning police officer kind of thing, rather than, hey, did you really have to vaporize that guy? Maybe we could have brought him in, kind of thing. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe some of this is like I should say for the recap episode, but in this Quill, yeah, that unfortunate overlap with Dark Will. Okay, that could be interesting. We don't even know what his power is. I think it's also I think Justice is getting, we fight Seraph. We haven't seen him back. He fights, looks for Starbrand for a
Right.
bit. It's like some a little more resolution, balancing out these like introductions would be good. There's potential to this storyline. I can see, oh, he's not just an assassin. He's sent by some who knows who, worried about the future. Can he see the future? I don't know. Yeah, what's
Yeah.
up, whatever's up there. That's. It'll keep me hang, going to the next issue, but okay.
Psi-Force fans who bought this one because of the crossover, surely disappointed.
You tricked me for the last time, Marvel.
The real question is, what do you think about the Mando paper?
I'm still feeling it. Excuse
It's
me. Smooth to the touch. I'm not sure I really noticed the di paper difference from the other books this month. So,
Is
did
the
you?
coloring a little off for yours? Mine feels like the colors are a little like too bold.
That I could see that. Yeah,
Like the
and
flesh tones are kind of weird sometimes. And
that's always the way with, you change a paper quality and. Everything you've been working for a while is suddenly has to be readjusted so that you because yeah the newsprint would have very different qualities from even this sort of intermediate paper, and then when a couple years later they go to glossy
yeah.
white, everything is like glaring at you. Yeah, so luckily we're not there yet, but. I think
Yeah.
we're off of newsprint. This definitely feels a step up.
It feels newsprinty, but yeah, fancier for sure. I think the art too, like it's always one of my pet peeves, I guess you would say, like when you just have like blank backgrounds and just figures on them kind of stuff, which always makes me think that they were kind of rushed in doing it, right? So like there's a wall and another blank wall and that kind of stuff. And some of the faces and figures like vary from like excellent Lee Weeks work to like questionably distorted kind of stuff. Like just it makes me feel like some of it just kind of got rushed out. It's a little
Yeah.
distracting. Some of the Justice faces in particular, with like way too many lines on them, just start to look a little funky. Yeah, like bottom of page 11 in the middle, like he just kind of looks like a little zombie-ish. Bottom
Yeah,
of page 6 is like kind of rough. It looks like ET kind of popping out of something. It's like, again, not to trash an artist who's obviously good, but like some it's kind of distractingly funky.
sometimes it's very, I imagine, referenced, whether he's, doing himself in a mirror or something, but then a lot of it'll get kind of, more abstracted so that you can. And then, like, this quill, so it's a little, if they stretch his face out a little bit more, it'll look like a Dick Tracy villain,
Or like
Johnny
Hammerhead from
Longface.
Spider-Man or something,
There you
which I
go,
think was also a Dick Tracy villain.
yeah. It continues. I'm not going to say the pits, but it's B.
Yeah,
Okay.
I would C plus it, maybe B minus. Like it's fine. I honestly, the more I read it, the more problems I come up with for it, which isn't always the case. When pushed, it would be Nukin rather than the pits, right? With the binary choice. Speaking of the pits.
Okay, let's zip on over to our backup story. I didn't even have to ask myself what we're talking about there. We've got where's my script? The
Night Mask.
Night Mask appearing in a short story, The Real Me. And the credits are this are David Wohl story, Tom Morgan art. Wohl was the assistant editor, I guess, on the New Universe line.
Yep.
And read
Frequent wrestler companion to Mike Rockwitz, I believe.
Yeah, so kind of a sounds like a bit of a handful at the time, but still a young guy who is going on later to
Co-create
create Witchblade and
the
something else.
darkness, yeah.
Oh, So I don't know. Can we see glimpses of that later success here?
No.
It's interestingly follows right up on last week's ES People Night Mask crossover, which followed right on the heels of DP7 25's or is it 24's? Maybe 24's
Yeah.
Night Mask investigating Dave Landers' mental block that had been put there by the ES People. He sort of fades out from Fort Benning, where they're located, and appears in real life at the ES People's secret mansion in upstate Wisconsin. The ES People sort of disguise themselves. Whatever confronted him, that was in our last backup story, and realized that he had had these problems. And so they also erased his memory, Keith's
Right.
memory, put a block on him probably, and sent him like off wandering into the countryside. That's fine in so much as it is, but we are picking up there. And story starts off with Keith kind of in a making a pissy face because he's in the real world, but he's in his night mask outfit and he looks like an idiot, really.
Yep.
He's standing by the side of the road, unable to thumb a ride, and there's a little narration box from him. No, not from him. This man's name is Keith Remsen. In the realm of dreams, he is known as Night Mask. In that realm, Night Mask can perform superhuman acts which are limited only by his imagination. Right now, though, Night Mask is not in anyone's dream. He's somewhere in Wisconsin. Keith is thinking to himself that he's been standing around for hours. No one slows down to give him a ride because he looks like a crazy person. And he doesn't understand what he's doing there. All he can tell is that he's in Wisconsin because of the license plates of the cars that drive by him. He also doesn't know why he's in a night mask costume. As I said, the story is called The Real Me. So there's a page about a recap where what I just went over. And, I will forego at the moment some of my commentary on this. But yeah, DP-724, he goes into Dave Lander's dream. And then that's the last thing he remembers. And now I'm here in the real world, looking like I have only in people's dreams. So he realizes he's not going to get any help from anyone. And suddenly, boom, great, a motorcycle gang. That's really what I need right now. So he's about to like head off into the woods. And he's like, hey, you, where are you going? Hey guys, check out this loser. Looks as if he just escaped from the nut house. No thanks. We got a rather cartoonish shot of Keith running into the woods. Please don't follow me. I just want to get out of here. Yo, wait up. We're not through with you yet, pretty boy. So the bikers all accost him, and they a lot of like biker movies in the 60s and 70s. I'm not sure they're. Seen this in a while, but yeah, hang out, guy. The party's just beginning. Yeah, we're gonna show you how the Cro-Mags have fun. Oh man, oh man, oh man.
That
So
sound
these,
kind of sexual.
the whole thing could be very much a gay biker thing, yes. So yeah, the biker gang sort of surrounds him. There's five or six of them.
All
And
clad in denim.
there's no helmets. Terrible. And they sort of make fun of him and start hassling him. But he, Keith, realizes even though he's not in a dream, he still has, he's a strong, wiry young guy. So he sort of jumps out of their circle and they're impressed by his acrobatics. And then he runs back into the woods. And one of them calls out, hey, penguin, you can't do that to the Cro-Mags. I have no idea what he means by
No
that.
idea. You can't even search that because it just shows up as penguin.
Penguin?
I like the next panel though, because if you look at it, it's like two guys with a chain, two guys with like pipes, one guy with a green knife, which is sort of interesting, and then one guy with a gun, which is, I'm thinking this is like their hierarchy. You got the gun guy, you've graduated to hold the chain, you got to stick with the pipe, and you get the Nerf plastic green knife. You haven't proven yourself to the Cro-Mags yet.
Yeah, the names we got are like Rocco and Mike, I guess. Okay. Yeah, the they split up, head into the woods. One of them gets some bonked on the head by something, and when he looks up, Keith swings down and gives it to his with his sort of kicks him full on. And they
Yeah,
get
it's
a
kind
little.
of like a he's kind of Batman in this one. It's like flipping away from people, swinging from trees, kind of stuff. Like,
Yeah, if he was like a gymnastics expert or something, you can do this on like a the oh, it's not the parallel bars, but the uneven ones, maybe? Yeah.
yeah, something like that.
Yeah, and as the biker goes down, it's Gruen. So Keith is feeling pretty good about himself. That army training comes in handy. Maybe I can take these guys after all. So the second biker, he sneaks up on and gives him a fist in the face. And the guy is pretty unfazed. He knocks Keith out with with the pipe. Walled.
Pipe guy.
After the names of the editors in the chauffeurs things in the earlier story, and now we have like every time you're punched, you say part of some editor's name. I'm like, okay, that's enough of the inside jokes for one issue, you know?
Right. You're ruining this totally pointless and unnecessary side story that's not interesting.
So Keith is surrounded. The leader pulls
Gun
out
guy.
the gun, and being near here in the middle of nowhere with nobody around for miles, I'll put you out of my misery and make that scar on your face a lot bigger. It's going to shoot him in the face. Sorry, guy, but that's life in the land of the Cro-Mags. Oh God, I
Just
never thought it would end like this. It can't end like this. The end. No, I'm kidding.
I mean, we could end it here.
There suddenly the bikers are surrounded by scary ghost trees.
Kind of like the stuff you would see
No.
on like a 6-year-old's Halloween card or something.
Yeah. If you had
Maybe
this
like a
sort of,
Smurfs episode.
they're at best sort of Scooby-Doo villain looking, but I mean, they're just the scary woods in Wizard of Oz. I don't know. Yeah, it's all rather silly, but the bikers are, of course, frightened. Oh, what's going on? Keith is impressed. Wow. And then Keith himself sort of transmogrifies. You are in my world now. And he's three times as large as them. Now you die. And he hits one of them, and they all run for it. Keith thinks to himself, I've never created an illusion in real life to more than one person before, but I'm glad I was able to do it now. And he strips the guy who hit of his clothes. Again, nothing sexual going on.
So
And
like stolen valor, but for biker gangs.
yeah, and then he realizes the guy had left his bikes. Short time later, Keith is on the road. All right, this is the life. Fort Benning, here I come. Definitely a long ride on a motorcycle, believe me. Wonders how he's going to explain everything that's happened to him, but he starts singing Born to Be Wild to the end of, and to himself at the end. And that's it. It's a little brief story with not too much to go on. I gotta say, Keith, we've been seeing a lot of Keith lately, which usually hasn't been that great because Keith is kind of a narc. He definitely tried to get Stephanie into the army, which, if it n didn't endear him to his reading public, at least us two. And yeah, I realized later that yeah, if he'd had his memories, he would have gone right back to Major Zentner. Hey, there's a group of ES people in Wisconsin somewhere. We can definitely recruit them. Well, thanks, dude. So yeah, he's I don't know. This would have been a little bit more impactful also if he'd had what he says. Oh, I've never done that to more than one person before. I'm not sure that was really clear before. We had these sort of waking nightmares in it, that Psi-Force issue 22, where Thomas we he was treating Thomas Boyd, and so it's like, oh, you have powers to project your nightmares into the waking world, except we've kind of seen that before, so
Maybe
this is.
that was the point of this whole thing, like to just build on that narrative that he has powers in our regular world, not just dream world stuff. And
That's
then they
my
just
theory.
didn't really execute it very well.
That's the
Maybe.
theory I'll go with. Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. So.
But really, I mean, could you have used the space to follow up on like what Priestess is doing from Mark Hazard or one of the kickers guys or something,
Brick, Dasher, and Suicide. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, we've had this. Suicide is not the answer, but what if Suicide appeared in one of the backup stories?
Right.
Bam! I never saw that one coming. Anyway. Okay.
Suicide is the answer to one of our new universe quiz questions.
So, I don't know. What else do we have? We have a couple of house ads. One for Semper Fi, which is a new series starting up, which is similar to the NAM, I think, except it's got a couple of stories in each issue, and there are even more real life, and they cover like one family that, as it says, meet the Whittier family. For 200 years, they've been fighting for core and country. So like a family of
Family of Marines.
Marines from generation to generation. So the different wars and these guys in it. I don't think I've ever read an issue, but I'm kind of curious to check it out. If I come across one, I'll give it a try.
Yeah, I don't remember. I definitely don't remember it. So I don't think I've read it either.
If it's suitably realistic, it may get drafted into the new universe at some point by
The
us.
meta new universe.
The new universe. Let's see, on sale this month we have the only thing we haven't covered yet, next week's
The Star Brand,
the
yeah,
Star Brand.
which is
And did
all
you
the
want
way
to?
back at 15, so it's like way behind in issue numbers.
Oh yeah. Would we cover everything in the official
We
timeline?
didn't do the timeline yet,
Okay.
which had the, I mean, a bunch of stuff that we pretty much already know, but added one, again, kind of questionable football team to my list of Kickers Inc. Alternate universe football squads. Since August 1st, 1986, stock person Arthur Fenway manifests his paranormal power of gravity. So this would be like Artie of Free Fall and the Tangler, right?
Right.
While driving home from work, Jack Magnacotti leads New York Smashers to a 56-21 victory over the Elmhurst Gunslingers. What? Is it like a suburb?
The near closest thing I could find was, yeah, a suburb of Chicago, which already
There's
has
already a
one or two
Chicago team,
teams.
yeah.
Yeah.
Where
This
by
feels like an
Wayne's,
inside joke more than like a new information for the new
yeah.
universe.
I think we haven't talked about this one yet. Have we talked about this one already? I'm
I
getting some
hope not.
deja vu here, but anyway, Jack Magnaconti, this is all we get.
That's our news for. Yeah, we could go back and look at the issue one of Kickers. They went through several games where Jack is first kind of even realizing what his edge.
Yeah.
So these are one of them. We get some notes about Proudhawk collecting the Psi-Force crew that we from the Psi-Force annual going up through Psi-Force number one. The curious thing for DP7, Philip Nolan Voigt hires Rhoda Delk to be the Paranormal Clinic's head nurse. Did we ever see Rhoda Delk? I don't remember that
I don't
name
know. It
ever
must have
coming
been
up
in
in.
at least something, right? Like maybe the issue where Randy was dreaming or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Tenzin is trapped in Daedalus Darkwill's dream and is running around Baja California. And I there's this covers like 3 or 4 days, and it goes that Proudhawk dumps all these other kids off in San Francisco and then heads to Russia to get Stasi and like is back in the next day. I mean,
I
that flight would take forever. I don't
don't
know.
know. Russia and the West Coast, or Siberia and West Coast, maybe are relatively close.
Maybe. And it closes out with Kratzy killing Dr. Swenson in the first issue of Spitfire and the Troubleshooters.
Yeah, so we got
So.
a long way to go for the official timeline.
Yeah, they really some of them are very front loaded. Yeah, a lot was happening early, and then July 22nd, so we're only a couple weeks past that from the white event.
It was
But
kind of nice to see, just to get some reminders of some of those old stories, though. Like, oh yeah, Fritz Kratzy. And,
yeah.
well, they just kind of killed him with Steelhawk, though, right? It's just kind of anticlimactic end to the murderer of your father kind of thing.
It's better to sort of focus on the good times, I find.
Yeah, there were some good times.
Oh, let's see. Anything else I'm missing?
Doctor Strange, Sorcerer Supreme on the back cover with some nice artwork, fighting Atomic Fireball Headman.
Yes, that does look nice. Some Kevin Nolan. Yes. It's Doctor Strange. I think that book didn't last too long. Never, there was, I remember two or three different attempts to give him a series around this time, none of which really worked. Oh, well, that is it for this week's episode. And Doctor Strange is like beloved, and yet all these books that went for 30 issues, it's like, okay. I don't want to talk about it. Get all choked up. Anyway, that's it for this week. This season we'll finish up with the number 25s, which we just covered. But ironically, that means it finishes with something that's not number 25. Next time, the new universe checks in our former flagship, the Star Brand, number 16.
The Star Brand number 16. Oh dear. The Star Child plays God and unleashes the ultimate curse, the elimination of death in the new universe. Written and penciled by John Byrne, inked by, hey, Tom Palmer.
Of course, it's a dream. You don't know. This is one of those books that we had seen in the when we were collecting that it really stuck out. It's the cover
Like, who is
with
this
the.
weird guy with a goatee fighting a robot? And, like, is this supposed to be his Star Brand?
Yeah, it's the most comic booky looking cover, I think, in the whole new U. So we'll see what that was all about finally. We'll be happy to get to it. Fine. In the meantime, you can find our website, kickersinc.com, and you can always email us, newuniversepodcast@gmail.com. This has been the voice of the new universe, and we will see you back at the spinner rack.
And always remember, it's your universe, idiot.
It was only supposed to make a buzzing noise.
I won't beat myself with what ifs.
And then his head explodes.